This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Mumia Must Live, an emergency report on the medical mistreatment of the world's most renowned political prisoner.
We move to a critical issue. In 1976, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that prisoners were entitled to the same medical and dental treatment as everyone else in their communities, and that prisons withholding treatment may be held liable for violating the U.S. Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. However, the reality is that we might never know how many prisoners have suffered or died from medical and health care neglect or willful mistreatment behind the walls.
But the case of journalist, world-renowned humanist, and political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, now in the fight for his life against the outrageous and deadly medical treatment in the prison system, is highlighting for the public the necessary fight to ensure that no more members of this vulnerable population suffer and are deprived of adequate health care, that the Supreme Court holding must be followed.
Mumia Must Live, an emergency report on the medical mistreatment of the world's most renowned political prisoner, with Esperanza Martel, peace and human rights activist who's worked on social issues dealing with Puerto Rico, independence, political prisoners, education, and health care for decades, and Joanna Fernandez with the campaign to bring Mumia home, who teaches 20th century U.S. history, the history of social movements, the political economy of American cities, and African-American history. Let's listen.
We need to be able to make a connection within the Black Lives Matter movement, that murder is the most extreme form of police violence, but police violence happens every day, and it puts innocent people in jail that then are sickened in prison by this horrific system. So what happens when young people are imprisoned? They're subjected to a daily diet that's high in carbs, in salt content. So because of the horrific diet that prisoners get, there are 80,000 prisoners that suffer from diabetes. They've been sickened by the system. 40% of prisoners in 2012 had chronic medical conditions, including asthma, cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. Sitting on top of this medical crisis is a for-profit provider of medical care in the prisons, reaping an enormous amount of profits. They're making so much money because these medical providers are engaged in around-the-cost-cutting measures. They're trying to cut corners at every turn, not provide prisoners with the tests they need and the medication they need. At SCI Mahanoy, where Mumia is housed, the company is called Corizon Correctional Healthcare. Corizon Correctional Healthcare has had to pay out millions in legal settlements because it's been proven that they've killed people, bungled their treatment, and offered inadequate treatment. It's a system that disproportionately targets African Americans and Latino, poor people. It sickens them. This is a human rights crisis of epic proportion. In the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, we have a situation in which the state is deploying torture against a human being. Mumia's body is completely disfigured. His skin looks like elephant hide. He cannot sleep at night because he is in pain and he's scratching all night long, and he sleeps throughout the day. In March, Mumia fell into diabetic shock on March 30th. His blood sugar went up to 779. So diabetic coma registers at 800. He was in diabetic shock at 779, only points away from being in a near-death situation out of which he easily would not have awoken. Had it not been for Major Tillery, another prisoner, who went to the head of the prison, Carestes, and said, "Are you going to let this man die?" Mumia wouldn't be with us today. And at some point, Mumia recounted to me that he was heartened when he heard another prisoner stand up for him because he couldn't do that for himself. The cost of that for Major Tillery was that he was transferred out of SCI Mahanoy and thrown in the hole in another prison for 3 or 4 months. And he was recently released from the hole because of a campaign we launched. So Mumia fell into diabetic shock with his blood sugar level registering at 779, but also, which is something that no one has inquired about, he had a sodium level of 168, which is, according to doctors, lethal. A salt level of 168 produces brain damage, apparently. Mumia survived. I visited Mumia just last Saturday because Pam got word from someone in the prison that Mumia's cell had been raided. And Mumia's body is disfigured, and he has lost 25 pounds in the last 2 months. He looked really weak.
Say how much he lost before.
Oh, and when he was in medical crisis, in that medical crisis, he lost 50 pounds in a very short span of time. So Mumia looks very weak. He was more lucid during the visit than I've ever heard him, but his body is very weak. You should know, because this is going to hit the news soon, Mumia cut his locks, all of them. He cut them himself with a clipper, because they were falling out. This is important because Mumia's locks represent defiance. It represents move. It represents his politics. But Mumia is more than his hair. And he's ultimately fighting to survive, to make sure that the system doesn't get away with murder. Let me just give you a sense of what he told me. Mumia, as a result of this diabetic shock, had a swelling of the brain. He had encephalitis, which means that, so I asked him, so okay, you look better, you sound better and your face looks better. How are you doing? And he said, "I've been through war, I've been through hell, but in the last 2 weeks, I've been able to read again. Up until this moment, I've not been able to contain words in my brain." For me, that is devastating because books have kept me alive, imprisoned. And people are continuing to ask me to produce and to write commentaries and to give talks. But in the past, I was able to do a commentary in my head in no time. I outlined the themes and then I wrote it up. And now it takes me a week to figure out how to put ideas together on a page. Once someone goes through a crisis that's that epic physically, it takes approximately a year for your body to respond. And it's been approximately 6 months since Mumia fell into diabetic shock. And Mumia is a fighter. So he's reading in half the time. What I want to convey is that the state has attempted to kill Mumia's body and Mumia's spirit, but they've not succeeded because Mumia is reading and he's writing. He's going to come home. But we need to figure out how we are going to connect Mumia's case to the larger crisis of healthcare that is tantamount to torture and an international disaster, to connect that to the crisis of police brutality, violence, and murder, and we need to connect that to the Black Lives Matter movement. How we are going to convince the Black Lives Matter movement that freeing all political prisoners is the moral assignment of their generation. Because without the sacrifices that political prisoners made in the 1960s and 70s, the Black Lives Matter movement wouldn't exist. And I just want to let people know that Educators for Mumia Abu-Jamal, in collaboration with activists in Philadelphia, and we're hosting a conference in Philadelphia, honoring Mumia and all political prisoners on the Black radical tradition. And we are involving the different groups in the Black Lives Matter movement with the objective of connecting the dots and connecting these issues and strengthening our movements. Because what your generation can bring to the emerging movements is experience and a holistic understanding of the problems of the society and the lessons of the past. So we need to pump this movement with connections, but also with creativity. That's the assignment for this moment. Mumia will be free. The possibility for Mumia's freedom will increase exponentially with the advancement of the Black Lives Matter movement. And this is not just about Mumia. This is about justice, overturning a system that's rotten to the core. This is about all political prisoners. A lot of people say, you know, this is not just about Mumia. But if today there is greater attention and more discussion of health in the prisons because of Mumia, because Mumia fell into crisis and this incredible movement went into overdrive, and there have been articles since this crisis on healthcare in the prisons, because if the most famous prisoner in the world can be treated so horribly and tortured, imagine what the system is doing to ordinary prisoners. That's why Mumia's case and his health is important. Because if Mumia gets treatment for hepatitis C, that will establish a precedent for the 10,000 other prisoners in Pennsylvania who are suffering for hepatitis C. That's why on Thursday, the DOC and SEI Mahanoy wrote back to our lawyers and said, no, he doesn't have, this isn't a hepatitis C situation. Because if they do acknowledge that it's hepatitis C, then they'll be forced to cure him, and then they'll be forced to cure everybody else. Because once the cat's out of the bag in Mumia's case, the entire world is gonna shine a light on the broader crisis of healthcare in the prisons. The state has tried to execute him on numerous occasions, and it tried to do it again extra legally, but we've won. We need to keep on fighting, and ultimately, Mumia is gonna be cured when he comes home. And that's why we're here today.
Introducing Esperanza Martel, hearing her description of what happened with Pedro Albizu Campos, one of the great, great nationalist heroes of the Puerto Rican struggle that more of us should know more about. She was one of the youngest people doing political prisoner work, I don't know how many years back, been very active in the Puerto Rican struggle, currently in the 34 Mujeres that have been organized for Oscar Lopez, and I want to welcome her.
I'm going to pass this book around, and it's Collector's Item. It's in Spanish, and it's I Accuse. So this is the author who did an expose on the torture and murder of Pedro Albizu Campos. And you will see pictures that look very similar to Mumia's body right now and his physical conditions. You need to read this book. You know, most people don't understand the struggle for liberation of Puerto Rico and the resistance and the torture of freedom fighters. So you really need to read this book. It also has pictures of Don Pedro and during the time of the torture. So I highly recommend that it reads like a novel. So read this book, really. So people say how many years you've been doing this work. So I started very young. I started in 1970. I am been doing this work. And it's real important to really understand. Not only have I been working on the freedom for Puerto Rican political prisoners, but also for all prisoners. Did a lot of work on the regular prison population around women in Rikers for a long time. So I know what's been going on for a long, long time. And when we think about prisoners and the tortures of prisoners, you need to begin during slavery. Because the prisons, the models that was established with the prisons came out of slavery. And the same horrendous torture that our people suffered in slavery, whether it was slavery under the English or the French or the Spanish, it is what people are still experiencing today. So it's not disconnected. So I want to take you to Puerto Rico in the early 1900s. The U.S. invaded Puerto Rico in 1898, and from that period on, there was a resistance, there was a fight back. There's a young boy named Pedro de Sus Campos from Ponce, and some Jesuit priests saw that he was brilliant, and eventually he ended up in Harvard University, got a law degree at Harvard, and a degree in economics. And in his 20s, right, young man, he traveled solo around Latin America because he had worked on the issues of liberation of the Irish. He started the first Irish club in Harvard, and then he went to Latin America where he took the issue of liberation of Puerto Rico all over Latin America. And he comes back in the 30s and he's organizing. He's organizing not only around the independence of Puerto Rico, but what became a real threat to the United States government is that he was organizing the sugar cane workers. Because we got displaced, Puerto Ricans got displaced. That's why there were so many Puerto Ricans in the United States. But Albizu was organizing sugarcane workers, tobacco workers, and he became a real threat. Fast forward to 1950, where there was a rebellion in Puerto Rico, an aborted attempt to take over the Puerto Rico back from the United States, and Albizu gets arrested. He had been arrested many times. Albizu spent about 30 years in U.S. prisons. But in 1950, he gets arrested. He's found guilty of the same thing Oscar was found guilty, seditious conspiracy to overthrow the United States government, which is a thought crime, even though there were arms involved and people took over precincts and cities, and it was a revolutionary attempt. And he is put in prison in a very interesting name for a prison, La Princesa, the princess. It was a prison in Puerto Rico. And he experienced radiation. He says, I'm being radiated. Everybody says he's crazy, that it's not happening. This happened from 51 to 56. He's being radiated. And then there are movements in the United States, international movement, where they eventually have to release Albizu through the United Nations. I wanted to read to you how the United Nations defines torture. Because the case of Mumia right now is serious human rights violations. And we need to look at the Declaration of Human Rights and the Charter from the United Nations on torture. The way that we were able to get Albizu Campos released, even though it was 6 months before he died of radiation poisoning, once through the United Nations effort. That's what it was. Mumia is even more challenging because he is in a state prison. He's not in a federal prison. So, and his offense is a state offense. But I still think that we could take on stopping, because this is beyond a medical neglect. This, to stop the torture of Mumia and to stop the attempted murder of Mumia. That's what it's about. And it's really on us. And we have to figure out how we are going to take this to the United Nations, to take it to Geneva, right? To engage more international governments. I know that a few have been engaged already. The issues of prisoners and medical, in quotes, neglect, especially of political prisoners, is appalling. It's nothing new or novel. There are committees, many committees who are fighting against these things. But it gets worse and it gets worse. And now they're privatizing the prisons, and that's even going to be more horrendous for our peoples who are aging in prisons. So, yes, this is all about Mumia, and it's not all about Mumia. This is about every prisoner who is in a U.S. jail. You know, we are big on Guantanamo. Well, guess what? Guantanamo is in the prison right next door. Okay? And they just practice in Guantanamo. So that's my call. That's my call today. And Oscar, who has spent 34 years in prison, was in solitary confinement for 12 years. Is suffering, like every other prisoner, from some prison-induced illness. And I could go down the list, right? And we need to all stand up for them. So in Puerto Rico, we say libertad o muerte. Here we say free the land, right? Free of land and free all political prisoners. Thank you.
From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. Statement to supporters. I know that you've heard about my situation, and I can't thank y'all enough for your messages of love and support. Thanks to your love, I'm healing slowly. But I must tell y'all that the issue really isn't about Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's a system that claims the right to do what's wrong. Think of this. When's the last time you heard a doctor say, yeah, you're sick, but I won't treat you. Come back in a few years. You're not sick enough. Think of that. That's the position of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Imagine that. There are at least 10,000 men, and who knows how many women, in this state's prisons who have hepatitis C. 10,000. Now, I believe the number to be considerably more, by the way. For the vast majority of them, the state refuses to provide treatment, saying, not now. Doesn't that amaze you? And if it amazes you, it should also enrage you. It should move you, all of you, to organize. So I say, join us. Let us build a movement that opens the door to treating all that need it. So holler at our sister, Pan Africa. Let's build a movement that can't be ignored. I thank you all. With love, on the move, this is your brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Black Light by Abiodun Oyewale.
Mumia, you have gone beyond Job in the belly of the beast, locked in a cage like a bird, but somehow you seem to fly away. You're never really there where they want you. because you're with the people, living in their hearts, on their minds and their lips. A brilliant black light, a brilliant black light, a brilliant black light in a white hole of pain. A brilliant black light, a brilliant black light, a brilliant black light in a white hole of pain. A brilliant black light, a brilliant black light in a white hole of pain. A brilliant black light, a brilliant black light in a white hole of pain. Speaking about free Mumia, free freedom, and let it replace the air that stifles our movements and makes dull our day. Free freedom, let's do the dance, harness the wind in our feet, and step over the barbed wire that crowns our existence and rips at the heart of fate. Free freedom, and let it sing loud from the rooftops of every project in America, with the drums playing in the background. Freedom and Mumia have become one and the same. Mumia, you have gone beyond Job in the belly of the beast, locked in a cage like a bird, but somehow you seem to fly away. You're never really there where they want you, because you're with the people, living in their hearts, on their minds and their lips. A brilliant black light in a white hole. Mumia, you have gone beyond Job in the belly of the beast, locked in a cage like a bird, but somehow you seem to fly away. You're never really there where they want you. A brilliant black light in a white hole. A brilliant black light. Mumia, Mumia, a brilliant black light. Mumia, a brilliant black light. Mumia, 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 Mumia. Mumia, a brilliant black light. 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 A brilliant black light. A brilliant black light. A brilliant black light. A brilliant black light in a white hole of pain.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.